Good morning. Welcome to the Full Tonnes Breakfast on Sound Out Radio 102.5 FM with myself, Peter Sheeran, on a Wednesday morning, the 25th of August. It's 8 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in. And we have on the show today, we'll be joined by Penny Mills. And Penny Mills works with the campaign for CPRE. What does it stand for? Campaign to Protect Rural England. And they have a competition coming up, but they also are a campaign group, been around for a while. I'd like to learn more about it. I don't know about you. So we'll be asking Penny about what goes on with the CPRE. CPREDevon.org.uk if you're interested in having a look. I would imagine it's also CPREDorset.org.uk for my fellow listeners. I was struck. Penny Mills, who's coming on the show a bit later on, has difficulty with connections and things from where she lives, and so that just struck me about the internet and things like that. And then I don't know where this came from. Oh yes, I do. Yes, I do. It was Suze Browning pointed this out. So if you're listening, Suze, thanks for this. And it was about SpaceX, the Starlink thing. Now, if you don't know what Starlink is, it's a train of satellites in low Earth orbit. Astronomers are really up in arms about it. They don't like these things floating about. And apparently Elon Musk claims that new software can blank out these satellites from any observational things that go on. But that doesn't seem very fair, does it? If you've got a telescope and you're trying to look at Mars or whatever, and these things go sailing past, you don't have software to work that out for you. Anyway, interesting. It will be interesting to see what the FEPA, or whatever they're called, NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, say. And one of the methods they had to make them not visible from Earth was to paint them black. Yes, which coincides with the sad death of Charlie Watts.
Never to come back. I see people turn their heads and quickly look away. Like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it into black. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun, my love will laugh with me before the morning comes. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore. I have to turn my head until my darkness goes.
Good morning, Penny Mills.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Now then, campaign for the protection of rural England. What is it?
Indeed. Well, the Campaign for Protection of Rural England, CPRE, is a charity, and it was started in 1926. It was at the forefront, really, of getting national parks and greenbelt designated, really championing, protecting our green spaces and countryside. We're the Devon branch. There are 43 branches around the country, and we're the Devon branch, so we're Devon CPRE, and we work really hard to try and protect. And I think we're the only organisation, really, that's working throughout the whole county. So north, south, east, or west, if it's in Devon, we try and get involved.
It's been going a long time. It seems that it's more necessary now than it ever was in the past.
Yes, it does indeed. We are incredibly busy. I mean, Devon at the moment seems under siege from building. And it's really difficult, you know, that there are huge schemes proposed, thousands and thousands of houses, it seems. And, you know, local communities, town and parish councils, individuals, get in touch with us. It's a members organisation, so you can join, and we welcome people's support, because the more members we have, the more we can try and do, because we don't get any funding for anywhere. We rely solely on donations and memberships and legacy. So, yes, we're contacted by people from all over the county. I think the government at the moment are obsessed with this build, build, build mentality. And they think we want to build, you know, we need 300,000 new houses a year, and we don't. And we've commissioned independent reports looking at Devon's housing need, the real housing need, and we don't need to build so many new houses. And we've organised seminars over the last couple of years, obviously not in the last year because of the pandemic, but we've even had the housing minister down. He addressed a big seminar we organised at Sandy Park a couple of years ago, but our message doesn't seem to get through. It's very difficult, but we battle on.
And so you actually had the housing minister of UK Gov come and talk to you about these things. Was that like someone walking into the bear pit for them?
I guess it was. Yes, it was Kit Malthouse, who was the housing minister at the time. And we had 250 people there at Sandy Park, as I say, all asking questions. And it's so difficult because he didn't really give us the answers. Our housing report that we commissioned showed that we don't need to build so many houses, and we put that to him. It also showed that 2/3 of new houses in Devon are bought by people not from Devon, which is quite a staggering statistic. But another interesting statistic, which actually is from the government's own figures, which they released this year, is that looking at the county as a whole, we've already over-delivered by 30% of the new housing required, which is really quite staggering. And if you look at Plymouth, West Devon and the South Hams, for example, they've over-delivered by 44% over the past 5 years of new housing. So you have to question, why are we building so many of these new houses? And
I think I know they're on
greenfield land.
Yes, I think it's because it's very it's very attractive to developers, isn't it?
Of course, it's all about money. Of course, their businesses. I mean, we understand that it's all about profit. But our point, really, at Devon CPRE is we're not against housing. We're certainly not against housing. We're not against development. But what we want to see is genuinely affordable housing built in the right place, and that isn't what's built. They promise, you know, X percent will be affordable housing, and then they go back and renegotiate, and it doesn't get built. People can't afford the houses that are built. I think we've all seen this year, you know, that the stories in the press about house prices, and people from elsewhere in the country are all buying homes down here in Devon and Cornwall, you know, with more space because of the pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. But the house prices are absolutely rocketing, and local people can't possibly afford them.
Hmm. And they can't stay in their own towns.
No, they can't. They can't stay in their
everywhere.
Own town or village. And that it's a ridiculous situation, and we've got to address that. I think, I know it's not unique to Devon and Cornwall, but it's certainly exacerbated down here. I mean, we've all seen, you know, all the stories about all these beautiful, you know, coastal honeypot villages. You know, the prices are astronomical now.
Salcombe comes to mind.
Sorry?
Salcombe comes to mind.
Exactly. Salcombe is a good example in Devon. Mm-hmm. It's so difficult. I don't know really what the answer is, but...
But it also has an effect on the actual areas themselves. Salcombe is a dead zone during winter because more than half the population have moved out.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we see it in all these places, whether it's North Mayo, Salcombe, all around. Yes, I mean, huge percentages of places are holiday homes. I think the trouble is as well, when it comes to planning, there doesn't seem to be any joined up thinking. So, for example, 5,500 new houses at Sherford, just east of Plymouth. But there weren't any more hospital beds built at Derriford, were there?
Yes.
You know, and they're all about the roads, the hospitals, the school places. There just doesn't seem to be the joined up thinking at all.
Well, it used to be infrastructure used to be built to coincide with new builds, but that doesn't seem to happen anymore.
No, indeed. And you know, we've all seen, particularly, you know, this time of year with all the visitors, you know, our roads are absolutely chock-a-block, aren't they?
Mm.
And it's a big problem, and it's all around the county. It's, I mean, the South Hounds is so beautiful, but it certainly is everywhere. Right? It's North Devon, East Devon. It's all the same problem, and this is something that we're certainly campaigning about, and we're actually going to be producing a little film shortly just to highlight all these issues, and you know, hope to talk to some people. Key workers, if you like, to talk to them about what they feel about the problems about trying to get a house.
Mm. So campaigning, drawing attention to the issues, how do you actually proceed with campaigning? What effect does CPRE actually have?
Well, we're very good with publicity. We have a fantastic PR consultant that we use, actually. And we also have a fantastic planning consultant who's brilliant. And she's an ex-planning officer, so she really knows her stuff and what to talk about when you're putting together a submission to one of our local planning authorities.
Experts.
So that's what we do. We will, if someone bring something to our attention, you know, a planning application that they think is a problem in their community. Mm. We will give it to our planning consultant. She will have a look at it, and we put together a very professional submission to the local planning authority. This last year clearly has been difficult. We would perhaps be invited to a public meeting if a local community wants to do that, if they're, you know, particularly concerned about a major development, perhaps, and we'll speak at it. We're very good at drawing attention. We're very good at giving advice, how people can object to something. Mm. You know, it's about sort of drawing it to people's attention, getting to speak to the councillors, putting together a proper case, really, for why this isn't the right development in the right place.
Right. And how do you, it sounds expensive having experts working on your team. How are you funded?
Well, it goes back, as I say, we need support, we need memberships. We've got lots of members, but we always need more. And I say, that is all we rely on. And we're very grateful to people that donate or join. It's a bit like joining, you know, the Devon Wildlife Trust or National Trust or something like that. It's £36 a year at the moment, £3 a month. It's not a lot. Or a town and parish council pay a bit more, £5 a month, £60 a year. But it's all very valuable, and we can't do it without our supporters, really.
Yeah, I think you'll probably get a lot of supporters in Totnes. We're pretty much invaded by developers at the moment, and
we have lots of supporters in Totnes and around the South Hams, and we're really grateful. But we're always grateful for more. So please join. Please go to our website, cbredevon.org.uk.
Yes, we'll put a link to that on the podcast as well. So
thank you. That'd be brilliant.
Not at all.
One of the other big issues that we've been concentrating on, apart from housing this last year or so, is these massive solar farms. They are very controversial, and there are half a dozen or so throughout the county at the moment proposed.
Yes, I wanted to get onto that actually as a separate thing. So what I'll do now is I'll bang on a piece of music, and then we can regroup over the solar farms.
Excellent.
Because that would be a good sort of segment to put in. It makes it look like I know what I'm doing. So let's have a break with Kate Bush and Running Up That Hill.
Do you wanna know that it doesn't hurt me?
Kate Bush running up that hill, very appropriate for Devon. Lots of hills around these parts. And we're talking to Penny Mills from the Campaign for the Protection of Rural England. And we were going to get on to the solar farms. Now, surely we need things like solar farms. We've got climate warming. It's a disaster. We need to sort ourselves out with power and things like that. So what's the problem with solar farms?
Well, the problem with solar farms is the solar farms are taking up our agricultural land, and we need our farmland for food production. And at the moment, Devon is facing six of these massive solar farms. They're all about 150, 160 acres. And it's just too much. Local communities don't want them. We don't need them. They have a massive impact visually. It's not just the solar panels themselves, which sometimes we're talking about 60, 70,000 panels, 800,000 panels. They have miles of security fencing, CCTV cameras, inverter boxes, you name it, they have it. They look like an industrial scene. They're totally incongruous in the countryside. And they're taking up, as I say, our valuable, valuable green fields. And they have an impact on the wildlife. And we don't need them. So we've been running a very high-profile campaign, and we're incredibly grateful because John Nettles, who's a very well-known actor, I'm sure people will know.
Bergerac. Exactly,
yes, Bergerac, Midsummer Murders, you name it. And he's absolutely on board with us, and he's helped us make a little film, which has been viewed thousands of times already on YouTube, and massive publicity has really helped us with it. Because, yeah, people just don't want them. We don't need them. People, you know, there's thousands and thousands of roofs in this country. Thousands of roofs. Warehouses, offices, industrial, you name it. Why aren't they on there? Why aren't solar panels on roofs? Why are we taking up our valuable farmland? It doesn't make sense.
Hmm. I do actually have a friend who is an engineer, and he's very, very... he finds solar panels very tricksy. He is an environmental engineer. He does lots of work on things like turbines and things like this. And they're working on systems to get power out of the sea. But he was saying that the huge problem with solar panels is that they generate power whilst the sun is shining, of course. And that is when people don't need power.
Exactly, exactly. That's absolutely right. They are producing an intermittent supply of electricity, which is no good, and it destabilizes the grid. I'm not an engineer, but that is what all the engineers will explain, and I understand that. You know, I think our peak demand for energy, for power, is in the winter, in the evening, and that's, you know... So these solar farms are no good. Not in this country. You know, they should be where the sun is strongest, which is countries, you know, Asia, Africa, south of France, south of Spain, etc.
On the other hand, with climate change, they're becoming more effective every day. It's anyway, is it difficult in terms of putting out a message like this? Because you could be accused of being climate deniers if it was just saying... CPRE don't like solar farms, therefore they don't think the climate's a problem.
No, in fact, I think an awful lot of people actually agree with us when they see the scale of these things and when they realise, I mean, just taking Devon as a whole, we've already got over 4,000 acres of farmland as solar farms, and that's, you know, quite a shocking statistic, actually. The ones now that we're talking about, if you take half a dozen of them together, they're in North Devon, Torridge, Mid Devon, East Devon. We're talking about another 1,000 acres. I think people actually are concerned, and I think people want to protect our wildlife as well. And I think people understand now, actually, this is we need to protect nature, and it's all about the natural balance. And there are right ways of doing it and wrong ways of doing it. And I think really when you present what we're talking about, and when you also understand that, you know, when you look at some of these massive new housing developments, they don't have solar panels on their roofs, do they? And people think, well, that's not right.
Mm. And also the issue, I would imagine, and I haven't read anything about this, but it strikes me that these solar panels create little sheds effectively in fields. And so you end up with these sort of spaces underneath the sheds. That must be creating a whole new ecosystem of some sort.
Yes, I mean, I think overall they're very destructive of the land. I believe that, you know, that obviously there's maintenance of them. They have to be cleaned. I imagine that will involve some sort of chemical to keep the weeds down, et cetera, et cetera. So, and also you have to ask what happens to them at the end of their life. What happens about, do they go to landfill? These solar panels include toxic materials. And I think, going back to your question, I think, you know, you have to ask, are these really low carbon? When you think about where they come from, the manufacturing, the refining, the raw materials, the processing, the transportation, because most of them are actually coming from China. So I really question, actually, the carbon footprint of these things.
Mm. But strikingly, is if they were on redundant spaces, such as roofs, they would make a hell of a lot more sense.
Well, it would, absolutely. And, there are suitable places for them, but our Devon's green fields are not suitable at all. We've also raised the question, we've written to all our MPs, actually, in Devon, where solar farms are currently in planning, about, which is a very serious issue. It was highlighted by Sheffield Hallam University about the sort of the ethical sourcing of these things, the sort of the human rights and where the forced labour is being used in the raw materials, etc., in China. And we've raised this with the heads of plannings and the chief executives at all our local planning authorities here. But at the moment, they're saying, well, the ethical sourcing or not, the sourcing of the components of any planning application, whether it's a solar farm or anything else, isn't a planning consideration, so there's nothing they can do about it.
Right, okay. Well, we need to be more joined up in our thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. It is all about joined up thinking, anything to do with the planning.
The other aspect of solar farms is that weird effect. I remember as a youth rape fields became more prevalent in the past, and people even back then were complaining that these big yellow fields were a blot on the landscape, although they're quite pretty in some ways. But a solar farm is this startling, shining beacon on,
yes,
in when you look from a distance, and if the sun is shining, you get this great glowing field.
Yes, it's glare. Yes, there is an issue about glare. And, I mean, apart from just the blot on the landscape, that visually they just look intrusive. They look like a sort of alien thing in the middle of our sort of pretty countryside. There is an issue about glare. I mean, that's also true, really, about any solar panels. We know several cases around the country of people really suffering from glare from, say, a neighbour's solar panel on their roof, and it's a real problem because, again, it's very difficult for people. If you're someone affected by that, just by the way, you know, these things are angled, it is a real problem.
Right, okay, that's interesting. I've not heard of that as a problem before, but that's an interesting aspect of it. Now then, we have a competition to talk about. So in order to do this wonderful thing, which makes it look like I know what I'm doing, the breakup of the show, we've got the Weller Man. You've got a connection with this sort of thing.
Yes. My husband sings with a local sea shanty group on Dartmoor, actually, and it's really popular and it's grown. There are an awful lot of sea shanty groups now forming, and Devon is surrounded by the coast and the sea, and it's an important part of our history, and it's very popular. So yes, I chose a sea shanty.
Yeah, and give a plug to the group that your husband's in.
They're called Mariners Away, and as I say, they're based in South Zeal on the edge of Dartmoor near Okehampton, and they meet regularly, they sing at lots of festivals. I think this weekend they're singing at the Lyme Regis festival, so they're all looking forward to that and practicing. So yeah, no, it's very popular.
Great. Well, I've only seen the Mickey Take versions of this. So the Wellerman by the it's the Longest Johns, wasn't it, that you wanted in were they in Bristol?
That's right. Yes. Okay. Yes.
There once was a ship that put to sea, and the name of that ship was the Billy of Tea. The winds blew hard about it down, blow me bully boys blow. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. She had not been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain called all hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow. Ha! Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Before the boat had hit the water, the whale's tail came up and caught her. All hands to the side, harpooned and fought her when she dived down below. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. No line was cut, no whale was freed. The captain's mind was not on greed, but he belonged to the whaleman's creed. She took that ship in tow. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. For 40 days or even more, the line went slack, then tight once more. All boats were lost, there were only four, but still that whale did go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. As far as I've heard, the fight's still on. The line's not cut and the whale's not gone. The Wellerman makes his regular calls to encourage the captain, crew and all. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
The Longest John's version of the Wellerman. Young Landscape Artist 2021. Tell us about that.
Well, we've been running a painting art competition for youngsters for many years, actually. And we thought this year we'd raise the age limit. We've usually done it just for young children, and we get lots of entries, primary school children, etc. But we thought we had lots of requests last year, and in lockdown, we had more entries than we've ever had before, which
course.
Was interesting.
Yes, that makes sense.
But we had lots of requests, could my older child do this, et cetera, et cetera. So we thought, well, why not? So actually, we've raised it to 18, and we're hoping to get lots of entries from, a whole variety of young people. Devon's landscape, it doesn't matter what it is, something outside, it can be their favourite place they visit, a view, their back garden, a park, the countryside. But it's very simple. We've extended the deadline to the end of September. They just need to send us their picture on A3 or A4, pop it in an envelope to us, and we will be judging them. Well, this year we've got an artist to help us with the judging, Kath Haddon, who does some wonderful coastal and countryside paintings. So we're looking forward to getting lots of entries.
Oh, whereabouts is Kath Haddon based?
She's sort of Exeter, East Devon.
Okay.
We're really looking forward to that. So, I'd say last year we had more entries than we've ever had before because of lockdown, and some fantastic entries. And in fact, we made some of the best ones into a calendar, which we then sold for fundraising, which was great.
Wow. So anybody under 18 can join in with this?
Yes, indeed. Yes. And there's some cash prizes. It's nice. It's just a nice way to celebrate the great outdoors.
Let's get to the nuts and bolts. How much cash?
£100 for the winner. We've got two age groups. We thought that was the best thing to do. We've got the sort of 7 to 11 and then 12 to 18.
Hey, that £100, not bad.
Exactly.
And you get in the calendar.
Sure, there's some budding young artists out there. Send us your picture.
And it goes in the calendar as well?
Yes, I mean, we hope to do another calendar this year. Last year was the first time we'd done a calendar, but it was great. We had some such fantastic entries. I mean, really beautiful, really talented young artists. So hopefully, I'm sure we'll get the same this year.
Yeah, so not only can you win money, you can get notoriety in a form of a calendar as well. That's great.
Exactly.
Good.
Exactly. And the other competition we've run for the last 4 years is our Devon's Best Churchyard competition. And we've been out and about judging that. And we'll be announcing the winners next month in September.
Oh, right. Okay. So are Totnes in the running?
They didn't enter, I'm afraid.
I will have a word with the town council.
Absolutely. But we have had entries from churches in the South Hams, yes, and it's great. It's all about recognising what's well looked after for people and wildlife, and that people are doing more and more in their churchyards because they're beautiful places, you know, they're real sanctuaries, green spaces. So.
They seem to be quite controversial at the moment because of rewilding. A lot of places, and that includes Totnes Churchyard, rewilding it seems to be a thing that lots of churchyards are now doing. And some people get a bit upset about areas of it not being, becoming a bit unkempt. I think that's just a personal opinion, isn't it? There's no overall.
Yes, I do understand that. A lot of people like their churchyard to be very, very manicured. But that's not what we're looking for. We're not looking for best kept. We're looking for the best for people and wildlife, and that is talking about different mowing regimes, leaving wildflowers to seed, that sort of thing. Bug hotels, bird boxes, log piles, things for insects. And more are absolutely doing that because they recognise, I think, that these places are havens for wildlife and they're also sanctuaries for people. Sometimes if they're in a busy town, you know, it's a great place just to go and sit. And we're looking for, you know, well, what do they provide? Are there enough benches for people? Is it well, you know, are the paths okay? And it's very interesting. It gets us about all over the place, actually. We've had a lot of entries this year, more than last year, many more than last year. So, but the winners will be announced next month.
Right, okay. And back to the painting competition. When can people apply and when does the application stop?
So it's open right now and the deadline for entries is the 30th of September.
Okay. And so they can send them directly to you. How do they get to you?
Yeah, just put them in an envelope to me, say A3 or A4 size. And our address is all on our website. And then 30th of September. We're hoping for lots of entries by then.
And what's the website address again?
cpredevon.org.uk.
Grand. Okay, well, get in there if you're below 18. If you're over 18, you're out of the picture. Forget it. Now then, another thing that happens in our countryside, we've got an issue that happens, and going for a walk between here, Totnes, centre of Totnes, up to Bobby Tracy and the other one mixed up. Oh, damn it. Never mind. Up to a local village between here and Peyton. Everybody else knows what I'm talking about, so I'll not bother even trying anymore. But if you walk along the roadside there, it's going towards Paignton. You can tell, we've discovered in Totnes, how long it takes to consume a McDonald's burger and fries and a milkshake, although milkshakes are currently unavailable, there's a roadside bit just outside of Totnes, and it obviously takes something like 3 miles to consume one of these meals because all the packaging is thrown out on the side of the road at that point. And it seems you can just pick up McDonald's packaging and Kentucky Fried. Let's not be other outlets are available. it's becoming a curse, isn't it, during pandemic? It's got worse.
It has. It's awful. It really is. We've all noticed it. I've noticed it driving along roads. I noticed I had to go to Exeter and, the whole of the A30 just seemed to be just strewn with litter. Awful. litter and fly tipping, that's something we've been campaigning about for decades, actually, literally decades. It's a big CPRE thing because there's no place for it at all. This year, we've joined forces. There's a new collaboration throughout Devon called Clean Devon, and it's run by Devon County Council, and all the local authorities are involved with it, lots of organisations, including ourselves, to try and do something about this litter, to draw attention to the problem and to reduce the problem. And there's a Clean Devon website where people can report bad instances of litter or fly tipping, which is just cleandevon.org. But we're really pleased to be part of this. It's a collaboration of organisations throughout the county. But it's got terribly worse. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people blame the visitors, don't they? But clearly, in lockdown, there weren't any visitors, yet it was terrible, terrible litter. It's awful. There's just no place for it. It's damaging to wildlife. It's damaging to everything. It's awful.
It seems to be partially education to me, in that I remember as a child there were lots of public information programmes on the TV, the little films, and telling you not to drop litter and things like that. And I guess that gets into the psyche that dropping litters is totally unacceptable as a thing to do. Whereas I'm not being a kid anymore. I don't know if there are campaigns like that, but I don't imagine there are.
Well, I think they are. I mean, schools are definitely on board with it. And I mean, I agree with you, you know, sort of start young and get the message in to youngsters that it's just not acceptable. Take your litter home. That's the message. Mm. And why? And I think they need to understand how it can be damaging to animals, to livestock, to wildlife, to all of us. It's just bad. No, schools are definitely on board with this. And you'll see more and more and more communities that do litter picking and you know, litter picking sort of activities. We can hire out. We've got litter picking kit. We've got the litter picking sticks and high-vis vests. But, of course, you can't really encourage people to do that along busy roads. That's the trouble.
Yes.
And I don't know about you, but I think along the roadside, it's really bad. Yes, I know that when our councils, you know, they come along and cut the verges, don't they? That, of course, exposes more litter, and I think what we need now is for it to be picked up. But you can't really encourage, for obviously health and safety reasons, communities and children to be doing this on main roads.
I've noticed on roadsides they've even got signs saying do not drop litter, it's actually dangerous for the people that have to pick the crap up.
That's right. Yeah, it is absolutely. But it is a problem. No, it's definitely increased, and as I say, I know it's very easy to blame visitors for it, but it's not, because it increased during the lockdown. It was really bad. I noticed everywhere I went it was really bad.
I must admit, I went for a walk with my friend in Torquay the other week, although that's very, very South Devon, but we went down to a little bay, and I was genuinely shocked by the crap that was down there. And obviously parties were being held down there, and there was masses of junk, which would require a small truck to have them removed. It was
It's awful. No, it's awful. And I know there are problems, you know, on Dartmoor. And, of course, you know that the risk there to the Dartmoor ponies and to the sheep, you know, eating the thing. People just don't think. And I just don't. I agree with you. I mean, when I was a child, you were taught not to do that. And I just don't understand. And now I think people are even leaving their tents if they're sort of wild camping or whatever. They just leave their stuff there. Who do they think is going to pick it up?
So the getting the picking up thing is part of what CPRE are getting involved with. So you can hire stuff from you, can you?
We've got some litter picking sticks and high-vis vests which you need, which you can, you know, borrow from us, basically. If a local community, you know, wants to borrow some kit from us, we're very happy to lend it out. And as I say, have a look at the cleandevon.org website, because this is a county-wide collaboration of lots of organisations now to try and tackle the problem head-on.
And also there's that thing which we've done here, making it sound horribly saintly, but it's actually something you can get really locked into, is when you start picking up litter on a beach, especially plastics, you end up that being all you do. I must admit, I do get a bit bored on a beach, to be completely honest with you. But, you know, having been on a beach and then you see a piece of litter, you pick it up and you think, oh, look, there's another one. And once you start, you can't stop. It's like a packet of Pringles.
I know it is. And you'll see a lot of beaches now have a little sort of 2-minute beach clean, don't they? And that they have the stick in the bag. And I think it's great. And I agree with you. I'm the same. I have to pick it up. And it is. It's quite addictive, isn't it?
But, very.
You know, you're doing your bit. And there is so much rubbish on the beach, isn't it? And it does tend to be the plastics.
Yes, which are massively damaging to the environment in all sorts of ways. Even when they turn into little nurdles, they're called.
Oh, absolutely. No, it is. And it is. It's the same things that you find. No, and our beaches are so beautiful. And no, I'm the same as you. I get very addicted to picking it up. And you know, but no, it's great. More and more people are doing these 2-minute beach cleans. So I hope more people will do that.
Yes. Well, we've run out of time, Penny Mills. It's been a joy having you off of the campaign for the protection of rural England.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Yes, it's been fun hearing about it. And hopefully you'll come back and tell us a bit more, because we covered some of what you do, but not all of what you do. So it'd be great to hear from you.
Thank you. It'd be great. And we can come back and let you know about winners of our competitions.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll put links up for the on the podcast for the competitions and such like.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Penny. It's been a joy speaking to you this morning on the full Totnes Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5 FM. And you've chosen to play us out with a very appropriate song.
I have. Chris Rea, On the Beach. Devon surrounded by beautiful beaches. And I thought it's a lovely sunny day. It's a good song to start the day with.
upon like fire. Take me back.